And good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Well, the Supreme Court decision didn't simply invalidate the bans on same-sex marriage in the states. It employed a form of legal reasoning which may well be changing the rules of the game. You know, when you have a game that you play, the game can be enjoyed because somebody enforces the rules. So we know, for instance, in chess, you can't turn over the chessboard and call that a move. You devastated your opponent. No, you turned over the chessboard. You ruined the game. When the rules are enforced, you know, the rules of the game, you can play games. And, you know, you'll win some, you'll lose some, but you can trust that the parameters of the field will remain the same, number of players will be the same, the way the scoring is handled. And if you're ever going to make changes in the rules, it's done by a public process, involves the commissioner of the sport, or at least the owners or the players vote, and everybody realizes the rules are changing. When one side or the other, however, refuses to accept the rules, you don't really have the loss of a game, you have loss of the entire sport. And the five justices writing for the majority haven't even changed the rules as much as perhaps abandoning them entirely. And that's one of the questions we're going to be exploring today as we talk with a number of guests who have given this great deal of thought and have had much experience watching these kind of cases. We're going to try to understand how the rules were changed, what the consequences are. This is not a surprise. Since the Windsor decision, which struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, and it's been Justice Kennedy who's written all four of the major homosexual rights decisions, and he wrote Windsor as well. It was clear that in striking down the Defense of Marriage Act and in refusing to let the citizens of California define marriage traditionally, that Justice Kennedy and his allies on the court were telegraphing us where they were going to end up on this question of gay marriage. So this was not a surprise at all. What was a surprise, and I read through the opinion, and I read through all the dissents, what was a surprise is how those who were writing the dissents and those who were in on the majority opinion seemed to inhabit two different worlds, two different universes. There's a troubling inability to speak to one another. Justice Scalia, for instance, in reading the decision written by Justice Kennedy, calls this a judicial putsch. He mocks it as having the profundity of fortune cookies. It's quasi-mystical. The language is fierce. When I was reading, I had to say to myself, good heavens, are these men ever going to be able to have a beer together again? Because Scalia was just caustic in his criticism of the whole style of it. So not just the content, but the style of it. I mean, he thought it was full of ambiguity. And one of my guests today, Robert Riley, is going to point out that time and again, the majority opinion violates some of the most basic rules of logical analysis, including the foundational rule of non-contradiction. It is, and I've read these things for a long time, even for me, this one looked bad. And it's hard to know what the consequences will be. I'm not at all worried that marriage in America is going to be that much worse off as a result of this decision, because heterosexuals have done a heck of a job anyways with it. This doesn't help at all, and it does really gets rid of the gender condition, which is a big step. But I think there's more at stake here. So for instance, on Friday, did you see the White House bathed in rainbow? You know, my first thought when Nick showed me this picture on his iPhone, I looked at it and I said, you know, it looks like a child's party favor. The White House, garish, colorful, a tad silly, a little cheap looking. And that's the way I like my party favors. It's not the way I like my White House. And then it occurred to me, yeah, my White House, that's right. This is a place where all Americans are supposed to look, regardless of partisan consideration. The White House is a powerful symbol of bringing American people together. It's the national home. And when you get in the national home, you kind of transcend the partisan squabbles. Now, to see the president and his allies use the White House as a partisan victory token, I found pretty upsetting. It sets the wrong tone for the future. Listen, when the Soviet Union collapsed, the United States didn't paint the Kremlin in beams of red, white, and blue. President Bush was gracious, even humble, even though we had won the Cold War. He didn't immediately start triumphalistically shouting, glory, glory, we beat him. No, he knew that you have to show dignity towards the foe. When Robert E. Lee left the Appomattox Courthouse after surrendering to Grant, Grant's soldiers started cheering in jubilant celebration. Well, Grant, at once, sent word to have it stop. And he said the Confederates were now our countrymen, and we do not want to exult over their downfall. See, Bush and Grant were wise. They tamped down the triumphalistic howls that victors often emit. They were gracious victors, I think influenced by historic Christian thinking about war and peace. They chose to lift the defeated foe in order to help them retain dignity and save face. And the reason for this is pretty practical. The foe is still part of us. We're going to have to live together with the foe. Lincoln, after the Civil War, spoke in ways that tried to overcome the polarization that America had been through. But what we see here is that President Obama and the gay marriage allies lacked this grace in victory. This was an in-your-face, we won. Now, I kept thinking about this. Why? Why would they do it this way? Why the hubris of painting the national political home for all Americans, the White House, in rainbow, was a way of saying, we're not rebuilding America, we're rebranding America. It was a claim that we're all supporters of same-sex marriage now, right? Let's rejoice. We're all supporters of same-sex marriage now. The White House is in rainbow. Of course, I say, Mr. President, I'm not. And the response is, well, if you're not, then you aren't with us. You're against us. We're going to marginalize you. And I think that's what this is about. For many of us, we thought this would be something that we got over. I honestly believe that those who are activists, very successful activists in this whole thing, what they've got going for us here is another fight. And it's not about homosexuality either. No, it'll be about religious liberty. They're related, but homosexuality is just providing the launching pad for an attack upon religious liberty. We'll say a lot more about that today. But, you know, the campaign worked to call right wrong and wrong right. They tried to claim that Christian activists were imposing religion on people. And, of course, when you think about it, this is incredibly silly. We were doing what the Kalahari Bushmen and the Hans Chinese and the Carthaginians and the Aztecs and people throughout history have done. We were simply standing by the human, historic, natural understanding of marriage, one man, one woman.